Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. The headline of a recent Glenn Greenwald story read something like, Canada, at war in the Middle East for 13 years, is shocked that a terrorist attacked its soldier. And in a recent column that we wanted to talk about, Ron Paul has reminded us that Canada did not participate in America's Vietnam War and was even a haven for those young men who were resisting the war. But today, as you write, Dr. Paul, Canada is joined at the hip with Washington's interventionists.
Yes, it is. And it's sort of sad. And of course, when things like this happen, you wonder, why did they change the policy? And what does it mean? Is there an ulterior motive? And also, for me personally, it's sort of sad because I sort of looked up to the Canadians, even though we may have some disagreements on some economic policies or something. But I still looked up to the Canadians because of the foreign policy. It was more of a peace foreign policy. And of course, I was in the military. I did serve 5 years in the 60s. But I knew of people who went to Canada, and it was very, very controversial. And I'm sure our government put plenty of pressure on the Canadian government at that time. And they stood firm. And I thought they stood firm on principle. And they were independent and didn't yield. So what is it? Why is it different now? The world is not more dangerous. The world was much more dangerous when we had to deal with the Soviets. And a case could have been made that Canada would have been very much involved if we had a hot war with the Soviets and a nuclear war broke out. So they should have been more engaged then. But now they are yielding to this neoconservative pressure. And I'm just trying to figure this out. One thing that maybe someday I'll find out, I know one reason why we build so many military weapons in this country and why there's political support, because most of the time the airplanes and the heavy equipment is built in all the states, parts from every state. So who knows? There may be some companies up in Canada that actually benefit by building airplanes. So the Canadians now have announced, I think they are going to send 12 or 15 fighter jets over to the Middle East to take on ISIS. And I keep thinking, now, if Canada is a peaceful country and they're not wanting to take on anybody, why would you even need fighter jets? The United States isn't going to attack them. So the only thing that fighter jets for a country like that can do, it's not really defense. It just gets them into trouble, you know, sending them over and then becoming vulnerable. But it raises this big question that I've been involved with in discussion ever since, you know, the first presidential campaign is, why do they hate us? Why do they come here? Of course, I tried to make my case that it was logical. It was blowback. That's what the CIA said would happen. If you antagonize too many people, kill too many people, they're going to retaliate. And sometimes they don't care how other than to kill. But they will kill even civilians to make their point and get their attention. But, you know, in this case, on these two attacks, which compared to 9/11 were rather minor in Canada, but still very, very serious, you know, military people were killed. I thought that was a powerful message. They didn't just go and put a bomb in a shopping center just to kill people. They were expressing an anger. But the other thing that always came up when I complained about our foreign policy was, blame America crowd. It's never anybody else's fault. It's always America's fault. And yet it's really the opposite. I don't like the leadership in our foreign policy and thought we could prevent some of these things from some happening. But the same type of comments have been made since I've written that article. And they say, Ron Paul doesn't even want the Canadians to be able to defend themselves. What has nothing to do with your right of self-defense. And matter of fact, if somebody's on the verge of attacking us or involved in attacking us or the Canadians, they have every right to do what they should do and, you know, and trying to stop it and use force against people. But long term, it's best to understand what the motivation is. I often think, you know, about any time there's a murder, which is rather frequent, and you hear about it on TV, is, well, so-and-so was killed. We have to find out if this person could do it. What would his motive be? So, but in foreign policy, they never ask for motives. And that really makes a difference because if it is a result of foreign policy, then maybe we can do something about it. But what they would like to do so that we who are the critics just would go away, they claim that we don't, that we're justifying the killing. No, we don't want any killing. But they'll say, oh, well, if you try to explain it, that means you say, oh, okay, I guess it was okay for these jihadists to come and kill people. You know, I don't know how good this analogy is, but I've thought about this is, you know, we have a lot of killings in our schools. At least they're quite frequent. Somebody goes nuts. He gets a gun and goes out and shoots a bunch of people. Now it's getting almost every month you hear about this. And then if you read carefully and follow up on it, you find out that almost all these young people are on psychotropic drugs. So the combination of a disturbed child put on drugs that makes it worse, and then they go out and kill people, that's pretty important information. But that doesn't mean we justify this hoodlum, you know, who's been turned into a hoodlum, you know, with the medication, that the people, the authorities and the people who are being attacked, they have every right in the world to defend themselves and try to stop it. But you never get rid of the problem if it's psychotropic drugs. In a way, I look at our foreign policy, and unfortunately, I see the Canadians going along with this as maybe a psychotropic drug, which is the real problem, and we have to eliminate that. Will this eliminate all acts of violence and incidents like this? Probably not, because mankind is, you know, pretty well known for having people committing violence. But it's getting to be epidemic. It's very serious. And unfortunately, 9/11 never woke us up. It put us sound asleep because the neocons became more defensive and more aggressive. And then they went to prove how aggressive they are against the attackers. They went and destroyed our liberties. This is what they did. They created, you know, NSA and a Patriot Act. And, you know, the evidence in Canada right now is they're moving in that same direction. And they had always been in the past much better civil libertarians as they were in the 60s when they allowed Americans to come up who were sick and tired of the war. So, you know, it snowballs. You make one mistake, you allow that to happen. And then the hoodlums win. The evildoers win because we do to ourselves what they would have liked to have done to us. And that is destroy our liberties and destroy our Constitution.
Well, I'm disappointed, although not surprised, that you've received some response or criticism for describing what has gone on in Canada with respect to their involvement in the overseas war. You know, Greenwald, who I mentioned earlier, expressed his frustration over the exact same point, over trying to explore the causation of event, why something happens, and then the risk or even the certainty that you're misunderstood. You know, Dr. Paul, I'm not sure that I'm sure that there are dim-witted people that misunderstand you and believe that you're justifying what has happened, but I believe that there are people that are perhaps not as slow on the uptake that intentionally misunderstand, contort, and twist your insights into causation as a means of a political attack.
Yeah, and I think if they don't win that argument, what happens is their foreign policy is destroyed. All of a sudden, you know, if they claim we are justifying this and they win that argument, then that means that we no longer can criticize, and that's what they want. They don't want any criticism of being the world policeman and to, you know, have this international army going around invading countries and being in 130 countries because they don't want that to be challenged. And there are a lot of different reasons for that, everything from the people who make money off the weapons they build, as well as for religious reasons and for, you know, natural resources, whether it be oil or other things, or putting in pipelines and through the Middle East. So there are a lot of motivations there. And those who might have a monetary motivation can easily radicalize, you know, religious people on both sides, whether they're whether they would be Christians who will yield to using violence, as well as some Muslims will yield to violence. And then that becomes the issue rather than, you know, the policies themselves, which I think has to be the real issue.
I'm reminded when these violent events take place, like the one in Canada, of Chalmers Johnson's explanation that one of the components of the definition of blowback for foreign interventionism is that the domestic or the civilian or affected populations must not know that it's an act of retaliation. It is very hard at this stage to believe that Canadians and Americans could be so utterly oblivious about the impact of our national militaristic activities overseas.
That again is why the propagandists are very important, whether it's war propagandists to get us involved in the first place, but it's the same type of propaganda that has to explain these events, that these events aren't expected and we shouldn't be surprised. So therefore they have to, distort the information. So that's ongoing. And unfortunately, the other side has a lot of ammunition. You know, they have the government. And you can't find Republican leadership complaining with the Democratic leadership. Right now, the only dispute in Washington with the Republicans is that Obama's not doing enough. He's not invading enough country and not dropping enough bombs. So we can't expect the two parties to sort this out under current circumstances. And also, we could look to our media. But is there a difference in foreign policy between Fox and MSNBC? Absolutely nothing. So it's almost like throwing up your hands and saying, "Well, this is impossible. We can't take them on." But I don't. I think we're better off now than we've ever been because we get to do podcasts and we get to do other things on the internet, and there's a lot more organizations and even the students on university campuses are starting to look at this. They're very, very excited about non-interventionist foreign policy, and they're very excited about the Austrian School of Economics, which in many ways go together, because Austrian economics would prevent the expenditures, for these wars. So, no, I think as difficult as it seems, we have the vehicle, and that to me is the internet. That's why, unfortunately, the other opposition knows this, because right away they want to curtail the use of the internet so our message doesn't get out. But I think they're going to have trouble doing that, but we just have to keep making the effort to get the truth out.
Well, we never throw up our hands in despair anyway. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Another informative conversation, another great podcast. And don't forget that to hear Dr. Paul's perspective and comments regularly, you can subscribe to our weekly podcasts on iTunes. I'm Charles Williams.